You're listening to Auto D, coming at you live.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to the Auto D Show here on Dave Pratt's Star Worldwide Network Studios, broadcasting from high above Camelback Road in beautiful Scottsdale, Arizona. Excuse me. I am your host, Otto Daniolo, and this evening my guest is writer, actor, producer, singer, David Moskowitz, Mosky for short, and he's currently involved in a bunch of projects, not the least of which is the Mosky Channel. We'll visit with David right after this first cut from the Fervor Records recording artist Super Stereo called Sound It Out here on the Otto D Show, so check it out. It's hard to leave the radius of my house, she looked at me.
Listening to Auto D, coming at you live.
And that was Sounded Out by Super Stereo here on the Auto D Show, which is brought to you by the guys at Fervor Records. Check them out online at fervor-records.com. And if you want to check me out, you can follow me at autod.com. That's OTTOD.com. And now, without further ado, let me welcome to the show this evening's guest, David Moskowitz. How are you doing, David?
Bad. Happy to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, man. Thanks for coming on. Now, we've got you on Skype from California today.
Yes, I do, from Los Angeles.
So how's the weather in L.A.?
It's really good, actually. So that's 25 degrees, so it's hot past couple of months, so it's nice. Finally cooling down.
I heard on the radio today that today may be the last 90-degree day we have in Phoenix this year.
Oh, I bet. Yeah, it was, by the way, like 92, 95 earlier in the day, but same here. You know, it's what, almost Halloween. It can't be like this, right?
No, it's, I tell you what, the cooler weather is worth celebrating. I'll tell you that.
Definitely, for sure. Nice to have jacket weather, though. Yes.
Yeah. Sure. I know. You put all those jackets in your closet, and you got some cool ones. And in the desert, you never get to wear them. Everybody who lives here is wearing leather jackets, and when it's 90 out, because it's like, oh, it's finally not 120.
Yeah, right. That's like a, you get, that's like a cool snap if it's 90 degrees in Phoenix, right?
Exactly. Seems like it. Well, listen, man, let's start talking about some of the things you've got going on. You've got you're involved in a lot of things, and including a new movie or a series. Yep. A little bit about that to start.
Absolutely. It's a it's a web series. It was intended initially to be a short film and it turned into a web series, which is going to be released soon. I don't know exactly when. And it's called The Power of Beauty. And I play, of all things, a gay sugar daddy. Even though I'm straight, I'm a gay sugar daddy. But it was a lot of fun.
Well, what else can you share with us? In fact, how long has this been in production?
It's been, well, it was, we shot it back, I believe it was April or May actually late April of this year. And we shot it for about 3 days. It was a 3-day shoot. It went real quick. And the director's from Australia, Mark Bletsky. Came from Australia, him and his fiance, and Krista, and they came from, they came. He was here a couple of years ago, and he shot what was the framework of this, The Power of Beauty, right? He shot a couple of years ago, mm-hmm. 2017, and he wanted to revamp it, the story. You know, he saw, you know, when you, what's great about filmmaking or any creative endeavor, or music, you would know this too, you put something out there, you get reaction, and you tweak it. Well, you don't have to, but you tweak it to make it better. Mm-hmm. You know, you get feedback. So he got a lot of feedback from it, and he tweaked some things that stood out. The characters, one of them being my character, Julius. The, I don't have a last name of the character, but that's okay. I'm just the gay sugar daddy helping out this bartender. I can't show any footage right now because he's trying to raise money for it and to get the web series going, Mark the director. But character helps out this this bartender, this really good-looking Aussie bartender who came to America here, Los Angeles, of dreams of opening up a bar in Los Angeles. And so mm-hmm. I'm a regular at this bar, and so we have a quid. Speaking of quid pro quo, right? You hear about this quid pro quo, those three words every day in the news, right, with Trump and impeachment inquiry and all this stuff. Well, there's a quid pro quo between my character and the bartender character. And that is that if she, you know, finds men for me, that I'll fund her bar, her dreams of opening up a bar. Okay. So I'll give her cash to give, you know, to give this for, I'll give her cash to help find a guy for me. Sure. To make out, you know, this
is the premise.
That's real, quote, hot. What's that?
This is the premise.
The premise of exactly. So that's the quid pro quo. She helps me get the guys because she's really hot herself. So she helps me get, you know, because I'm a middle-aged, my character, I'm middle-aged too, but the character's middle-aged and not a flamboyant gay guy. It's just more like a low-key kind of, no, not like you find a West Hollywood here in Los Angeles. Just kind of real low-key. The guy has bread and a regular, at this, again, it's this bar. Mm-hmm. And so they have this, quote, arrangement. You'll hear that word in this movie called, you know, our arrangement, you know, which is she gets the hot guy, I help her off the bar. I give her some cash too because she's helped me get a real hot guy because obviously I can't get on my own, right? So I have to get the guy through her.
So now are you wrapped up on this project as far as your part's concerned?
Oh, yeah. It was just a 3-day shoot, really short deal, which was wonderful. It went really smooth and had a wonderful time. Mark is an amazing director. I mean, I'm not seriously, the guy is going to go far, just this whole approach.
Cool.
So we're wrapped. This is now, he cut it, took a couple months to cut it. Went to Finland. He moved from Australia to Finland with his fiance. He's there now in Finland. But we email, you know, nowadays you can email somebody and across the world, and he, within an hour, you know, he just sends something back to me. And what's interesting, we did Skype sessions. It was really cool. And, you know, different times we would do Skype sessions when I first auditioned for it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and I get this wonderful email back from him, which is, you know, I'm sure anybody would love this email, which is, we loved you. It's a consensus. We think you are perfect for the role. And I thought, wow, this is, and I showed it to my agent. I go, boy, I mean, this is like perfect email, you know? Can you imagine, I don't know if you ever got one of those, and I'm sure you have.
And when you do, you still think you're getting fired. You just go, well, that's the nicest way they've ever let me go that I've ever heard, you know?
Oh, yeah, well, I've had one of those. I've had those emails, too, from radio stations I worked at. Don't get me wrong, you know? It can go both ways.
Yeah. Well, listen, do you find Skype to be a more common tool now when you're auditioning? Do you do a bit of that, or is it more like a second level after you've been kind of selected?
No, actually, what's happening more nowadays, and any actor here in Los Angeles, any casting director in Los Angeles is going to tell you, it's self-auditions. I'll get to the Skype thing in a second, Skype meetings, Skype auditions. But the self-auditions, you get that a lot, where, you know, I'll tape it here in front of my computer, what I'll do is I'll actually record my voice doing the other character, right? So I do like in GarageBand, you know, the software GarageBand. Mm-hmm. So I'll record that, and so I hit the play, so the other character talks, and then I talk, so it makes it sound like I'm having a reader, you know? Mm-hmm. Kind of what they call cheat it, have a reader. Instead of, I used to do it without a reader, but I heard through the grapevine that, unfortunately, these casting directors are not real creative. I mean, just to stand straight up, you know what I mean? Like, apparently it's a no-no if I just record it without mm-hmm. anybody reading with me. Mm-hmm. Like, somebody's got to hear the other person. Really? So you can't get it by the way I act? Mm-hmm. No? Okay, so fine, then I'll record it. You know, I'm just saying, that's the truth, in my opinion.
Interesting.
You know, yeah, you gotta lay it out for people. Okay, fine, then I'll have record the voice, do my acting shtick, and then, you know, then apparently you'll get it more in their head as far as how it, sure. you know, it's going to look. Okay, so, yeah, so the Skype, yes, Skype, I've done usually reality shows. That's a great question you ask. I do a lot of reality show interviews via Skype. Mm-hmm. They'll set an appointment, and okay, I'm there, and I, you know, okay, we want a lot of high energy. We want to see, you know, I'm taping it, and then this is always the case. Then when I ask you the question, you got to repeat the question, like, so my favorite hobby, you know, so they go, what's right. your favorite hobby? Then I got to say, so my favorite hobby is finding the best slice of pizza in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. Because I'm from New York and I can't get a great slice of pizza if my life depended on it. Sure. You know, so you know what I mean? So that's kind of how that goes with Skype. I do I teach my quote day job is teaching public speaking and accent reduction auto. And so awesome. I use my Skype. I just did a Skype session, in fact, before the interview for somebody in the San Francisco area. Mm-hmm. So I do use for the, but yeah, so interviews, predominantly reality shows. But self-taping is like, I do half my auditions are self-taping, by the way, nowadays.
Mm-hmm. That's wild. And when you do that, do you find you get to maybe do a few different takes on the concept and can include them all as opposed to standing there doing one read and finding out yeah. you're off base?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, they're usually the last four. Like this other one yesterday was just a short, you know, a low-budget project. They go, just give us two versions of it. So I did two versions. Also voiceover stuff, too. They go two versions. But usually it's straight up, you know, I kind of get the gist. You know, I've been doing this enough where I got, mm-hmm. I'm not bragging. I mean, just by doing it enough, just got the gist of it. I got kind of the feel like, okay, this is what's happening, the nuance. You know, am I getting what's happening, the nuances of the scene for the director?
Mm-hmm. And you've been doing all kinds of stuff, too. You've done, in terms of your acting career, you've been involved in a lot of music videos, commercials.
Correct. Absolutely. And by the way, the most recent one, sorry, I just got to interject here for a second. Yeah. Really excited about. And yeah, I'm excited about the short film. Absolutely. It's one of my best work. My agent says for the short film, he said that it's the best work
yeah,
I've ever done.
Yeah, the clip you shared with me, I love. It's great.
But the most recent music video, which has not come out yet, that's why I wanted to interject because I showed you everything I've done so far. But this next music video, I play Alex. Do you know Alex Jones is?
Yeah. He's the crazy.
yeah, say like it is. You're not going to conspiracy
theorist guy. Right.
Crazy lunatic out there. Yeah. Hyperventilating conspiracy theorist.
Right.
And by the way, I respect this. You know what? It's free speech. You know, I'm not even a liberal, but I go, free speech, let him do his thing. But I'm going to get to the point here. But so, you know, I applaud him. He's entertaining for what he does. He has a big audience. So I respect that. So I play this Alex Jones theorist type in this music video, the songwriter. And I'll have to send it to you because, you know, being that you're a music aficionado, his name is Parker Harrison. Fantastic vocalist. Mm-hmm. He's got this really great commercial voice. This will be his third music video. And the other music videos were very 80s. He deliberately had an 80-ish style. And Zane is the director. Zane did an amazing job. I don't want to give it away, some of the things that they have in it, which is really cool. I'll just say, it's as if when they watch this, and if you've ever wondered what a talk show host goes through, it's like a day in the life of Alex Jones.
Mm-hmm.
From when he wakes up. I'm talking about, you know, do you ever wonder, Otto, like, a talk show host. It could be anybody. It could be Jimmy Kimmel, a Sean Hannity, or Tucker Carlson, or Bill O'Reilly. You know, when they wake up, you know, eating breakfast, you know, what they do in their day itself, how they interact with people, mm-hmm. in the course of the day. That's kind of what it is. You actually get a slice of life, a day in the life of Alex Jones with me being like, even though I don't look like him, I still. Pull up those emotions, and boy, let me tell you. I'm going to say, okay, sorry, I'll let you talk. What was really? Why could? Sorry,
it's the delay in Skype. Go, go.
I know. Sorry, the delay. I just got to say, what was really interesting about doing that show, this music video, which comes out, and I don't have the exact name right now, but Alex Jones' character is, man, even days after, I go, oh my God, I'm so paranoid. Like, I'm not normally a paranoid person. You know, this moderately paranoid, like everybody else is. You know, and I don't think the government's out to get me or something. I'm not that kind of paranoid. But so I've got, oh my God, I'm like more paranoid than normal. Like, oh my God, somebody's watching, you know, like as if somebody's watching me, somebody's looking at me, somebody wants to screw me, that kind of thing. You know, that character's every second is like they're paranoid. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine living a life like that?
No, I couldn't. And I believe that was called Deep State Pizza. Is that the name of the song?
Yes. As a matter of fact, that's one of the lines. I'm sorry, Parker, if I'm giving away some of the stuff. Yes, you know what Deep State Pizza refers to?
No. Maybe. I mean, I'm trying to wonder, what is this song about? Obviously, it's about this character, but give it to me.
Boy, I mean, so you really nailed it. Okay. Deep State, a lot of people know, it means people who have been in Washington for many, many years and have their own agenda, you know, whether it be getting, this is just the theory. It's not me saying it, it's just the theory is, explain the theory, the definition of Deep State. People have been, you know, just for a lifelong politician or a lifelong employee in Washington, D.C., who's had the job for 30 years and you can't fire him, you know, mm-hmm. or a politician for many years and the same old shit day in and day out, you know, and just these politicians just see for years and years and years. And the only way they're gone is if they're dead, you know, they die. And I'm not saying that I don't wish any death on anybody, or they're voted out, which takes years. So that's deep state. So you know, Trump is the deep state concept is, okay, you got a guy like Trump to drain the swamp of these, they call it drain the swamp of these deep state people. People have been there, have this agenda, and apparently the paranoia is they have agenda to get Trump out of office, which is the theory now, the conspiracy theory based on, you know, the impeachment inquiry of the Democrats. So deep state pizza, what does that mean? It means, and that's one of the lines in the project. It's funny you mention that. And what that line refers to, it was a theory, proven to be not true, that there's a pizza place, and I don't remember the name, you have to Google it, everybody, in Washington, D.C., pizza place there, where apparently they were grooming and keeping kids like as sex slaves. That's the theory. And then this one guy in real life went to this pizza place because Alex Jones was propagating this theory, you know, this conspiracy theory that Hillary Clinton was, harboring these child sex slaves in the back of the pizza place or underground in the basement of the pizza place. And this one guy actually came with a gun to the pizza place. This is for real. I'm like, he actually believed it and got arrested. So that's you take deep state pizza. That's what that means. It's
like drinking the Kool-Aid on eating the deep state pizza, huh?
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
That's pretty wild.
I never heard the term. I just know deep dish pizza, right? And about you.
Exactly. Hey, yeah. When is that going to be released?
I would say within weeks it should be. We shot a couple months ago, did reshoots. Not a reshoot, I take it back. No, I mean, what they call additional shoots to the video, which really it really enhances the video a lot. It was really a good thing they did that. And so I would say within weeks. I'm going to find out. In fact, after this interview, I'm probably going to email Parker, wonderful guy, amazing voice. And he likes Hall & Oates, by the way. Hall & Oates. And his songs sound like Dire Straits a little bit, if you like that kind of music.
So check out Parker Harrison.
Parker Harrison. And Zane is an amazing director. Like, I'm like, he blew me away. Like, because I'm a creative guy and I come up with different ideas. I'm like, holy cow, I came up with this one. I can't give it away because it's really cool feature of this video towards the end of it. I'm like, holy cow, that was a brilliant idea. So the guy is just, he does a lot of music videos. Zane is his name. Really terrific. Awesome. And I'm so blessed that he, you know, chose me for this role. I think chose a perfect person for
and
it.
And how did you land that role? I mean, how did that come to you?
Yeah, that's a great question. Here in L.A., we have three actor portals, actor websites that a lot of actors submit to get an audition. Excuse me, something caught in my throat. And one of them is called L.A. Casting. And so I saw this notice about they're looking for a conspiracy theorist type talk show host, and I host Mosque. We'll get to that later. I know we'll talk about Mosque the movies. I have other stuff, hosting. We'll get to that later. And so, and being a talk writer for 15 years in Phoenix, I go, you know, I'd be perfect for this. I would love to audition. And I did. I auditioned for it. And it was between me and another guy initially. And I'm like, oh, I said, and I saw in LA, it's it is cutthroat. It is really competition is fierce. That's okay. I always say, let the competition worry about me, not me worry about the competition in anything I do. And so I emailed back Zane. I go, Zane, look, I've done this. Let me just show you some other stuff I've done, you know, some links. I really would love to do, you know, I really want to do, I'm passionate about this. You know, I mean, I'm trying to give myself the edge to get this role, which sure. I feel like, and I think when you see it, you go, oh my God, you were the embodiment. Because I saw that some of the footage, I go, oh my, and I was like blown away. Oh my God, it's like the embodiment of Alex Jones. Like I totally recreated that, even though I don't look like him, you know. You don't have to look like something. I could be do Harvey Weinstein. I don't have to look like Harvey Weinstein.
If
I,
right? Yeah. So it's the energy. You just have to represent it.
Right, exactly. That's what I'm trying to – so I think I totally killed it, as they say, in the business.
Cool. Now, you've been in some other music videos, more notably even Justin Timberlake's video.
Yes.
A little
and that
while
was,
back.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, no.
That's the story itself.
That was fun to watch. I really enjoyed watching that.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for reposting on Facebook. I just saw that today. I appreciate that. Yeah. Thank you. So more people, your peeps can see it as well, and your peeps after this podcast can see it on your page or my page. David Moskowitz. So that was really something else. And I thought I blew it. I thought I blew the biggest thing that ever happened in my life. Now, let me just say, okay. So this happened in 2016. We shot it. We shot this in late April of 2016, came out a month later. So I auditioned in early April. So within weeks, I got the thing. But here's what it was. So there's a cast director out here. Dan, oh, he's going to kill me. I'm going blank here. Anyway, so he's here in Glendale where I live, right? He's actually pretty close to where I'm at, Dan. And he's a really big casting director here in Los Angeles. He does a lot of real people casting. And so he had a casting notice, or I got his email. It was an email. I'm on his email blast list, right? That's what you do, too, as an actor. Mm-hmm. Make sure you're on your email blast list. Make sure you're getting the notifications from all these different four portal websites for actors if you want to be a working actor. And so... So I applied to it, and they set me up. They called me and said, okay, we want to have you come down a certain time. It was on a Sunday. I'll never forget. It was at a coffee shop in Pasadena. I think the Coffee Bean and Tea Leaf, the patio there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Keep in mind, I go down there, and I'm thinking, I go, well, can I go to Dan's? The office is just down the street. It's only 10 minutes away, you know? And they go, no, it's over there. They want to get a real people kind of feel to it. And okay, fine, that's fine. You know, as an actor, you never want to argue with anybody because you want to get a bad reputation. You know, you always got to – my agent will always tell anybody, say, you just got to say yes, what time do you want me to be there? You know what I mean? You never complain. Mm-hmm. That's why I got a good reputation because I don't complain. Internally, I'm thinking, are you kidding me? I got to go really outside till Sunday. I mean, it's okay looking back. Obviously, it worked out. So I get down there, but here's what pissed me off, and I almost blew the damn thing. Down there on a Sunday, whatever time, and it was in the afternoon, and I'm driving. I drive along, and it looked like an Oliver Stone movie. When I was driving across the street looking for a spot in Pasadena, Old Town, because I saw a guy videotape somebody with an iPad. Nowadays, you can videotape people with an iPad, right? Mm-hmm. You don't use a camera, and it's pretty good quality. So I see this couple dancing, and I go, "Oh, I'm thinking in my head, oh, this must be where the auditions are at. It's close by. It's, you know, can you imagine you driving up and you know people dancing and stuff? It's just." So I'm like a movie in itself, the audition process. So I get a spot, and there's nobody around, right? Then I don't see anybody dancing anywhere, and I go to the patio. I go inside, talk to the manager. Hey, do you know anything about an audition here? And by the way, they wouldn't tell me who it was. I kept, you know, it was like a major, all you heard. And can you imagine somebody says to you, Otto, or anybody, your listeners, say, you were auditioning. It's a major recording artist, and they're international. Now, I thought J-Lo, no offense to JT, Justin Timberlake. What would you think? Let me ask you, what would you think if you heard international major recording star? We can't tell you who it is. What would you think?
Well, the first thing is I'd wonder if they're really telling me the truth, you know, because it's always kind of like, oh, yeah, you just don't want to tell me who it really is.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not really going to get paid. So it's difficult to trust that. But, you know, just to touch on that a little bit, that is how Paul McCartney hired Chatan Studios in Paradise Valley just before I moved here to the Valley. They hired them to tell them who the artist was, and they drove the mobile recording unit into the desert and did a three-day video shoot. The first day, they set the whole thing up and tore it all down without knowing who the artist was. And then they moved to an additional site before they found out who they were working with. Isn't that incredible?
Yeah, who was it?
It was Paul McCartney, yeah. But they never told them until they were 2 days into the shoot. They'd already practiced the setup and teardown before they knew who the artist was.
That's the way to do it. And by the way, you got TMZ and other media outlets, and you do have to be really careful about that. So check. That's right. So that's what. I even said, hey, can you please tell me who it is? And they go, no, we're sorry, we can't. And I get it. You know, that's the way the business operates, right? But I knew it was legit because Dan was involved. Dan, the cancer director, right? Mm-hmm. Major. You know, I knew it wasn't a scam. You know, and okay, go down there. So I asked an employee at Coffee Bean and Tea Leaf in Pasadena, hey, do you know anything about an audition? No, we don't. Okay, hey, can I talk to your manager? Hey, do you know anything about this audition? No, we don't. Okay, fine. So I get my drink, go to the back area. There's nobody. So then I walk to the front. Then I see the guy with the iPad again, you know, dancing on the street. He's got one of those. Nowadays you have a cordless, you know, one of those little boom boxes, the cordless deals. What do you call it? The wireless. And he's playing Michael Jackson, Can't Stop Till You Get Enough. And because that was a song I danced to. Anyway, so I go up to this table. Oh, so I go, hey, I'm here for the audition to the guy videotaping after he videotaped them, of course. I didn't interject when he was videotaping them. He goes, yeah, you got to go to the table over there. So I go to talk to these two guys at this table. There's no effing sign. There's no fucking sign. And I get, keep in mind, I'm getting fucking pissed. I'm like, really? You know, I could have went to Dan's office and, you know, and I go up to the guy and again, I thought I fucking blew it. I go, you know, I'm a little upset here. You never do this in the business, but I did it. I just, you know, when you get emotional and you just let it loose. And I thought I fucked up. And I go, you know, I'm really pissed off because, you know, I thought, you know, there's no signage. I asked the manager, asked an employee. They didn't know anything about this audition. And, you know, I know this is the guy with, you know, with an iPad videotaping somebody. But I'm here. He goes, oh, and, you know, they're kind of course, gave me this really weird look. I thought, oh, when somebody gives you that kind of odd look, this look of like, who the fuck are you? You know, you should be complaining. You're in no position to complain. Mm-hmm. You're dead. I was dead. And, you know, and I've never done that before, ever. And, you know, and I can assure that to my agent. I've never did that before. To the, even the ones I never got, never did that. As much as first try as I was on other auditions, I don't, you know. As many as I get, there's a lot that I don't get. But you got to forget about this. So anyway, so then I do the audition, and I can't stop to get enough. Do a little moonwalking. And I wasn't as good at moonwalking as I am now. Do a little moonwalking, and even though it's concrete, I do some spins. I do mime stuff. So I think that's what got me over what we call the edge, what gets you over the top. I did mime. And then somebody came walking out of a store after I was done and started clapping, and I knew I had something there. But somebody comes out of the store, they go like, you know, I'm like, wow, okay, that was cool. You know what I mean? You just do your 90 seconds worth of dancing to Can't Stop Till You Get Enough, Michael Jackson. It's not as easy. It's not hard to dance that tune for anybody, even if you don't have, you know, two left feet, as they say in the business. So, and then the next, and I thought, oh my, and I went to the guy that I spoke to earlier after I was done. I go, you know, I was trying to talk nice to him, obviously, both of those guys. Hey, thanks a lot. Really appreciate it. This is great. I had a lot of fun. Right? I thought I still blew it because people do harbor. You know, if you pull a stunt like that, like I did, like, hey, you know, I'm really pissed off. I'm not happy with this. I thought for sure I'm dead in the world. No matter how good I did, I thought, you're done. I wasted time. The next morning, I get a call from the same guy. He goes, hey, the director really liked what you did. You're one of his first picks. And, you know, keep your avail, you know, certain dates. And keep abreast of your email and keep watching after your email. So a day or two later, got more information, and I got the part. I got it. And one of like 12 dancers, it's got over a billion hits. And I did talk to Justin, one of the few that actually talked to him. He talked to me. You know, you never go up to an actor, right?
Right.
You know, that's my profession. Like, even if, like, you had Paul McCartney in your studio, you know, I wouldn't go up to him. Hey, oh, my God, it's not professional.
That's right.
I would just do my shtick if it's playing guitar or whatever you want me to do. And then in the course of the work environment, he would say something to me like, hey, it's a really honor, you know, an honor to work with you. Thank you so much. I'm just learning so much from you. You know what I mean? A professional, not like one of these idiots, amateurs. So anyway, so that's it. Sorry for the long story short, but that's how it all came to be.
So in that process, when did you know it was Justin Timberlake? When you got the first email the following morning, or when did you find out?
Yeah, great question. Thank you for asking. Actually, this here's how it was, because that was the thing. Who the fuck is this? I got to know, man. I mean, like, keep in mind, this is like, now I've done like 5 or 6 music videos in the past 3 years. Like, so it was one of my first big ones. I'm like, who is, you know, who? I'm, you know, you get the mystery going. And so I think so after I talked to the guy, I then, I forget her name, she's going to kill me, but another woman that works with
a lot of people are going to kill you when we're done with this interview.
Well, what's that? Yeah,
a lot of people are going to kill you, Dan.
Exactly. She's going to kill you. Yeah, exactly. I better flee to Mexico or Hawaii or the Dominican Republic. All right. So, because nobody's close to the Dominican Republic anymore. after a lot of stuff. Anyway, it was the second phone call. So the second one where I go, okay, so my fitting, you have your, it was a dance rehearsal. That's what it was. So I had to call for my, the dance rehearsal work with JT's choreographer. And it was like 30, 50 people, there learning steps. So it was when I called up, I talked to the woman at Dan's casting company, and she told me, and she gave me the information about the studio I need to go to for the dance moves, choreography. And I said, can you please tell me who it is? And she goes, okay, I'll tell you, but you can't tell anybody. I go, who? It's Justin Timberlake. I go, oh, that's awesome. And it's actually a relief, no offense, but I'd rather work with JT than J-Lo. This sounds really bad, but somebody I have really a lot of respect for.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's super talented, and I like his, solo career. Not all his songs, but, solo stuff. I have immense respect for him and his voice. Mm-hmm. And his acting is really good, too. I think he's underrated as an actor.
Mm-hmm.
J-Lo, it just doesn't do it for me, but for other reasons I won't get into. I even met her acting coach. I just saw Hustlers. It's still the same old J-Lo.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so I thought, this is cool. This is such a relief. It's like saying, wow, this is awesome. What a nice surprise. So that's how that worked. And then I went to the – I don't know if you hear all this. So I went to the choreography lesson session. And I can tell you, man, when you create a person, I applaud dancers. I think it's an amazing skill they have. But when you're a creative mindset and you're not a conformist, and then now you've got to conform – I'm just saying in general. What about you too, but – and somebody showed me dance moves, and I got to do exactly what they're doing. That's tough, man.
Mm-hmm.
That was the hardest thing. One of the hardest things. I know now it's easy because I got the gist of it and I got it. That's hard, man. It's like somebody who'd never played guitar before, piano, basic chord structure, right?
And then have you play with a band? I mean, you were dancing with a bunch of other dancers, so you can't screw this up.
Oh my God, dude! Now I can do it because it took me a year to learn the moonwalk. This is after that audition, a year to learn the moonwalk from somebody who worked with Michael Jackson. So I spent a year. Couple times a week learning the moonwalk. It's going to be a year to learn it. So now I know how to do that. Now I could fake it. I could be one of the Beyonce dancers. Just show me the moves. I could be a regular guy. I'm a little, plump, but I could be a regular guy doing the moves.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So now that's another skill. This is telling you, life, you got to just get outside your comfort zone, people.
Well, isn't that the truth? And you keep going, kind of modifying or doing whatever is creative and interesting to you. You mentioned your career in radio, 15 years. And that was all of that in the Phoenix area?
Yeah, predominantly started out in Tucson. Let's see, some of it in Vegas, but it started out in Tucson, KRK Radio, back in 1984, 85.
Okay, when you were seven.
No, I was born in 65. No, I wish. I was 19 at the time, actually, KRK Joy, just a board op right at the time. But Phoenix, a lot of the talk I was producing in talk radio, KTAR and KFYI, 550 AM.
Yeah. Now, was that your first job in radio? And did you come out from New York for that work? Or how'd you get out here?
Oh, great question. So I was in New York until I'm 14 and a half years old because of my asthma. Moved to my parents. I'm an only child. Moved to Tucson, which at the time I was known as one of the key places, a great place for someone who's asthmatic to live because the fact there's not a lot of dust. But the weather is really—it's decent. At least like Phoenix. Well, Phoenix has the 5 months, which is pretty hot, blazing hot. Tucson too, a little more drier, but it's just a better place with less dust. And that's why the skies are clear for the astronomy. The Kitt Peak Observatory. So it helps out for that as well. The clear air in Tucson. Whatever you think about Tucson, I know some people from Phoenix hate Tucson. Tucson hates Phoenix. Whatever, this is rivalry. But it's good for an asthmatic. So we moved out there, went to high school, Catalina High School, a school that Linda Ronstadt went to, by the way, not the same time I did, but years before.
Right.
The Ronstadt family is really big in Tucson. So I went there in the high school years and went to community college, studied music. So I was there for a while. And then I was with a band called the Sidewinders that became the Sand Rubies. They got a record deal, but I was with them before they did. And so I bring that up because why? Because I was
Because I wanted you to, because I wanted to get into your music career, because you sent me a song you sang recently that I've never heard you sing. And I thought, where did this come from?
Well, I wish I could. That was me playing guitar. That was me writing it. And I put it together. Oh, okay. Thank you. No, it was actually another singer. I could sing this very basic, but another singer, Keith England, who sang for the Allman Brothers. His mentor and friend was Greg Allman, the late Greg Allman of the Allman Brothers. And so he was referred to me by the engineer knew Keith England of the song. And I think it's one of my best songs ever now. Finally, I feel like I got the holy grail of songwriting. But taking all these, you know what I mean by that is
yeah.
you know, all the failures and you know, songwriting sessions and songwriting conventions I went to. You've probably done this too. And you're like, oh, you get the feedback. And it's like, now I got it. Mm-hmm. You know, just, you know, the chorus has to be catchy. I mean, if you want to have a successful, you know, song, it's got to be catchy. You don't have to do it, but it's got to be catchy and a good story and make it universal. So it appeals, you know what I mean?
Yep.
So anyway, so yeah, so it was Keith England. Fantastic. Amazing. And he pulled out just, I mean, like he went beyond my wildest dreams of what I envisioned for the song.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm probably pushing you through some of these topics really quick. We were in New York, coming to Tucson for asthma, got into school where you studied music, then I hijacked it to your new song. But we were following your path into radio from there. So how'd you get into radio from school?
So, okay, so I'm with this band called the Sidewinders. And again, Richard Hopkins, he's the leader of the band. Mm-hmm. I met the band through just one of their ads, like in Tucson, one of the music stores there. And just, you know, they were looking for a guitar player, a lead guitar player. So I applied and we hooked up that way. I met Rich Hopkins that way. So he was working at Care KJoy as an overnight, as a board operator. Real tapes, KJoy was the easy listening station in Tucson, which did really well. The ratings at the time, and Care was the old, like that was the oldie station playing 50s and 60s hits at that 60s and 70s hits back in the early 80s. Mm-hmm. So that's how I got that through. The band member Richard Hopkins, he and I since, you know, kind of parted ways, but I still maintained the Ray station. And I kind of got, that was the first time I ever got fired on at, because I was there for a year and a half overnight. And but looking back to the age I am now, I appreciate everything. Like, I would have been grateful for anything. But looking back, you know, when you're 19, you go, damn, I'm tired of working overnights for a year and a half here. Nothing's happening. Mm-hmm. You know, so and I want to do my music. You know, I was in, you know, Pima Community College studying music theory. I go, this is where, you know, this doesn't happen with the radio station time. And then looking back, that was the start of my 15-year radio career. Mm-hmm. And I'm grateful for that. You know what I mean? Like, start of it back in the early 80s. So that's how that happened. That's how I got in. And then from that, I got another job at it was a top 40 station in Tucson, and I'm still friendly with the through Facebook, the program director, Scott Forrest, now lives in Oregon. So I was there for a little while. I had my own music show, my local music show, so cut my teeth on that on the weekends in Tucson.
So now, that when you talk about 15 years in radio or 15 years in any career, most people think that's just where you're going to stay. But then off you go now to California, and you're an actor. Primarily working with acting. So how did you make that swing?
Yeah, well, how I made that swing was, and this is my second go-round in Los Angeles. I've been here now 8 years, second go-round. So here's how what happened. So I do the radio station. I'm over now at the pop station in Tucson. I think it's 1440 was the dial position. And so this is back in 1986. And then I was in a movie called, okay, so go back a little, just a drop here, a little bit in Tucson. Back in 1984, I was in a movie. So after I graduated high school, I worked at the radio station. Then I got an acting gig in Tucson for Revenge of the Nerds, which turned out to be a classic movie, 1984. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That in Tucson, February. And so I got a key part, a key extra part. So I don't have a speaking part, but I'm in a lot of, you know, throughout the whole movie. All my friends joke about it. And work with, you know, major people in it, you know, Robert Carradine and I'm just going blank here. I shouldn't go blank. Anyway, some major stars in it.
Yeah.
Anthony Edwards and John Goodman was another one too. So was in that. I caught the acting bug there mainly, and I go, okay. I really connected so wonderfully with the director Jeff Canoe at the time. I go, there's got something here. I really just connected with him. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. More so even the actors. Jeff Canoe. I just thought, wow, this is great what he's holding the whole thing. I shot Super 8 millimeter films before in my youth, but in Brooklyn, but never like this. So I got the acting bug. I go, you know, if I want to be the best, this is the logic of the time, 1984, 85, 86. If I want to be the best filmmaker, I got to go to the best film school in the country. And I did research. There's no internet at the time. I go to the library, look at newspaper or whatever, newspapers, magazines. And it was USC Film School in L.A. And UCLA, USC, and also NYU in New York. I didn't want to go back to New York, so I was from, and all the, you know, move because of my asthma, the cold weather. So applied to USC and got in, but not as in the film department. I just got in generally. And so it's just one of those things, like you just got to take a risk. So I took the leap of faith. USC, I'd probably get in, figure it out. And I did. It took 2 years, nerve-wracking years, right? And you go, so you see other people getting into the film school. Looking back, I could smoke all those people, knowing what I know now. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. How to, you know, how to write a great introductory letter to the, you know, to the. In fact, one of my friends now is on the staff of selecting the students for USC Film School. He was one out of 25 to get in there, which is the top in the country. George Lucas went there. John Carpenter, Spielberg, scoring stages there. He never went there. He went to Long Beach,
mm-hmm.
but not that it did anything to his career, right? But the major filmmakers, and I went so. That's how that worked. I go, okay. Then I went, you know, studied film. And in a roundabout way, I'm now, you know, applying what I've learned then at USC back in the late 80s, 86 to 1990, now, which we'll talk about.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I caught, you know, where the acting bug now evolved and now the filmmaking bug. And then things got bad in 91. It was just a recession. So I moved to Vegas at the time, and got to work for talent agencies there, did a lot of extra work in Vegas. Worked at one casino,
mm-hmm.
at the Venus Horseshoe and Human Resources. But I made some great friends there, still friends with the Human Resources director there.
Well, you
got to
have real jobs once in a while. None of these stories go through the arts without a real job somewhere.
And I know, right? I did, you know, radio for a lot of years, but real job. In between, I worked at the, you know, Sky Harbor Airport,
mm-hmm.
in the ground transportation there.
Uh-huh.
I'm putting on taxis or limos. So I did a lot of, you're right, a lot of worked at Domino's Pizza in Phoenix, Tucson. Again, the airport in Phoenix was my regular job there. I'm just saying different places.
Yeah, you know. I'm taking a look over some of these other credits you have on film, and you were involved in a crime series called Ice Cold Blood.
Yeah, I love that. I was back in January, February of this year, as a matter of fact. Love that.
Hosted by Ice-T.
Yeah, right, exactly. No, he wasn't on the set. First thing I asked is, hey, is Ice-T going to be on the set? No, he's back. Yes, they shoot him separately,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, cut it in.
He just, you know, they give him the lines, and it's nothing against him. He does a wonderful job. So, you know, he doesn't have to be on set. He just give him the lines. It's just the setup of the story, you know, the crime. We just recreate it. So the director, wonderful director, Brian, he'll say, you know, okay, now do this, pick up this, do that, look under the couch, you know what I mean, for evidence. And by the way, I got to say, that was the first time ever I ever was in a cop uniform. And it blew me away that everybody believed me to be a cop. Like, it was, like, say, in between shots, I was walking out of the house where we were shooting. This one Asian woman playing like a victim, right? I walk out. I hadn't seen her. You know, we hadn't spoke or anything. And I walk in. She goes, oh, my God. I go, what? She goes, oh, I thought you were a cop. You know, I mean, just the way I carry myself, the confidence. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. like, and I walk in with the blue suit, you know, mm-hmm. the blue outfit, the badge. I got the gun at my hip.
Yep.
You know what I mean? I just generally walk confident. I feel like this is the way I am. You know what I mean?
So it didn't even feel any different being in the costume, did it?
No, it really did. Like, wow. I like the respect, you know, I tell you, I like the respect I got.
Yeah.
This is something about being a cop. And so anyway, that's kind of my cop. So myself as a cop and people buy me as a cop. And I was in other music videos as a cop as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember.
And hopefully I'll get a lot of tickets if I'm going to show these cops my photos as playing them.
There you go. Yeah, you were in a music video called Perfect as a donut chopping trigger happy cop, according to your description.
Yes. Yeah, that was the second time I played. And it's a great question. That was the second time I played a cop after Ice Cold Blood, which is on Oxygen Channel.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, it's 4 episodes of Ice Cold Blood. And not speaking parts, but like a lot of the scenes. Anyway, so Cousin Stiz is his name. That's the rapper. This music video called Perfect. And keep in mind, this is how it is. Can you imagine you go on the set, you know you got to be a cop. And I was just told by the cast, the wonderful cast director, hey, you're just going to be in the background. So keep in mind, I knew it was going to be in a cop suit. They negotiated the deal. What are going to get paid? And, you know, there's an issue of, well, if we have to pay for the suit, we're going to get somebody else. Excuse me. And so get on the set, and the director, who's wonderful, Josh, says to me, he goes, okay, you're going to be chowing down these donuts. Like, think of it like these powdered Safeway donuts.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, and in that clear container, you're going to be, you know, chomping down, go over the top, he tells me, which I said, absolutely, that's what I'm all about, being over the top comedy. And he goes, I want you to just be like, you know, trigger happy, you know, the stereotypical white cop who wants to shoot to any black person just because they're black, that kind of stereotype. So he didn't say those words. I'm just saying he just said eat these donuts and just kind of get you real angry over the top that you want to shoot these three kids on bikes. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I did, over the top, chomping them down. In fact, one of the on the scenes goes, I thought you're going to, one of the lighting guys goes, I thought you're going to choke on those donuts. And I go, and I said, I said, I love donuts anyway. I don't like these donuts, but I love donuts. You know, they're not Krispy Kreme or Dunkin' Donuts. You know what I mean? They're not the, like, they're the ones you chose.
Right.
I took shots. But they gave me water, bottle of water. Thankfully, somebody came by with a bottle of water, one of the prompt people. So it was fun. It was great to go over the top.
So how many takes? How many takes did they do of you having to eat your donuts? Okay, clean off your suit. Let's try it one more time.
I would say three. It was like three because they had it right in front of the windshield, like a kind of a, you know, what do you call it, a moving camera. Mm-hmm. I think it was handheld with Josh there in the front. And I just, we did like three takes of that.
That's awesome. A couple more things. You know, I can't believe how fast time flies. We're 45 minutes into our little chat.
Oh, my God.
I haven't even played a second song yet, and I have a couple things I want to talk about. A buddy of mine is apparently a buddy of yours, Steve Wargo. And I didn't have a chance to call up Steve and ask him, what do you know, David? So he's like, ask him about me.
Oh, absolutely. I know Steve. He's a great guy, and he helped me out with this one. I want to know tell me what he said about me, if you can.
Oh, I didn't have a chance to call him up. I was going to call him before the show. All I know is on Facebook he posted to ask about you.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, so Steve Wargo, long story short, I met Steve because, back to 2007. This is before the real estate crash, right? Long story short, both my parents passed. I inherited some money, so I put in real estate. This is in Phoenix at the time, right? Before the crash of 2008, 2009. So I bought this penthouse in right there by Bank One. One house called Chase Field across the street from Diamondback's play, right? I knew the area well because I did a lot of promotions. My radio days for KTAR, doing promotions at Diamondback. So I go, this is perfect. I know the area so well, every nuance of this, of that street, that area there by the ballpark and with the Suns play and, you know, U.S. Airways Center. I've been there millions of times. This is totally for me. I could walk to these places now for the games. So I bought the place, a penthouse, a leverage money, got a $1.3 million loan. This is, again, keep in mind, before the crash, right? Mm-hmm. Anyway, so I go, all right, I want to milk this motherfucker because I can what I want to do is the Super Bowl is there at the coming to Phoenix at the time, the first one in years, right? Mm-hmm. Tom Petty was going to be the opening act of the Super Bowl. Excuse me, the halftime show. That was the year. Remember 2000? It was the Giants and the Patriots, I believe. So I go, I'm going to put this penthouse up for rent. This is before Airbnbs, by the way. People are like, how are you going to do it? What if people destroy the place? Well, I take a deposit. That's how. Mm-hmm. This is before Airbnb, by the way. So I got a lot of media coverage there in Phoenix. This is after I left radio because I had the million-dollar deal going on. I got to focus on that. So little did I know the real estate market was going to crash and I couldn't sell it. So I go. I contact Steve. It was through a friend of mine, another friend. I go, who do you know that you know, maybe shoot this? So I got a hold of Steve. We talked, told him about what I want to do. What I wanted to do is you know, HGTV, in fact, they just did the Brady Bunch house. Mm-hmm, I saw it in person, the Brady Bunch house, recently because it's here in L.A., Studio City. So my concept was to do this. I'm going to, have somebody videotape me. We're going to do a show, reality show, where it's a guy like me, a rush job to get this place ready for Super Bowl week for somebody to rent it out, you know. And that's what it was. So I hired Steve for that. And I still have the footage for it, Steve. I just, I'm onto other things. It was very painful looking back on it. That's why it's anything painful. It's like if you break up with a woman or something, it's hard to look back on that.
You don't want to finish the song. You don't want to finish the project.
Oh, dude. Yeah. Have you ever wrote a song about a breakup? Well, those are the best songs, right? The ones where you break up with a woman. Not, I'm not imploring you to break up with women, but, right? Aren't those the best songs?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They all come. The best song seems to come from pain. And I thought when the last time Paul McCartney got divorced, I thought we were finally going to get a really good record out of him. But it didn't happen.
We had some good ones. Yeah, with Wings, a couple ones, him and Linda. Yeah. But you're right. But Taylor Swift's doing a good job.
Oh, yeah. She's over. She's like a little obsessed. It's like, okay, she needs something else.
So I just saw her in concert. This thing. It's like, it's all her shtick is about is romance and breaking up. It's, the art of breaking up and, the new ones.
Go ahead.
No, that's why I met Steve. He videotaped. He did a great job. Cool. He did an outstanding job. So, and he's a good guy. I hope he's doing well.
He's doing great. So we're going to move on. I know you've got a lot of notes. I'd love to hear about Mosky and Friends. I also can't let you go without at least mentioning the story that we always see when we look up your name, and that is your relationship with schools.
Oh, yeah. I'll make that quick. I know we only got like 13 minutes or 10 minutes here. But, here's the thing with Chris. People go, what do you mean Chris Rock? I went to junior high with Chris Rock. And no, not just any kid there. We were best friends, like BFFs, They say BFFs. And we hung out after school. And it was a junior high back in 1970, before I moved to Tucson, 78, 79. This 1 year at Marine Park Junior High School. Brooklyn, New York. he was bused in from Bed-Stuy into the white neighborhood of Sheepshead Bay. I grew up middle class. It was mm-hmm. a middle class area. But a lot of white kids, and yes, Irish kids, as Chris always mentions. And he's bused in, and he, as he says, is one of the few black kids in the school. His junior high, we're eighth grade together. And we just became friends. We clicked. Just like anybody in life, you know, you click with people, you don't. And we just click. And Chris, like anything else, you know, when you – I love the fact he would always just talk. You know, I just love that, and I love that. Back then, even it was funny, you know. People go, what was he like at 13 and 14? He was funny back then. Just one of these kids that – and this is, I think, the key to success is as it gets to songwriting too or movie making or TV projects or actor. You got to put yourself out there and then see the reaction from people, from another human being, and then you tweak it. I think with Chris, that's why he got his ass kicked a lot. He talked about getting beat up after school, and me too. He kept shooting his mouth off, talking, just being annoying. And in New York, people just, you know, they're into their own world, and, you know, they don't want to – hear some chatter, you know, unless the girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
So we get, you know, chased after school and get beat up like his TV show. He based the character on me. Everybody hates Chris. So, and now, so fast forward to now, he gets on recently, just quite like a month ago, on an Al Franken show, his podcast, speaking of podcast, and says that, yeah, he remembers me growing up. He says he was the only, get this, this is what Chris was saying. In all the 9 years he was bused as a kid and bused into schools in New York, In those nine years, nobody invited him into their house to, you know, to play, except for one kid. And who do you think that kid was, Otto?
I saw the interview. That was you.
me, right. It's just me. He goes, oh, yeah. And then Al Franken asked about me. I never met Al Franken. He goes, oh, really, Moscow's a Jewish kid helped you out? And he goes, yeah. He goes, he's the only one. He remembers me. And he remembers my dad coming in the room and giving him a double look. But my dad's not a racist. So my dad worked in all black schools, a teacher in New York, in Brooklyn, near Ebbets Field, where the Brooklyn Dodgers used to play. And he probably just came, no, my dad, he just gave him a second look like, well, you're not a neighborhood kid, so who are you? You know, that mm-hmm. kind of look. Mm-hmm. Not like, hey, black kid in the house, get him the hell out. Not that kind of thing. You know what right. I mean? Back then, you know, we're talking the 70s, you know, there's probably still that stigma. In Brooklyn, mm-hmm. I never looked at kids. Maybe the way I was brought up, I just looked at somebody. If you're an asshole or a nice person, that's how I judge you. I don't judge you by your color, your skin, if you're mm-hmm. Hispanic or Asian.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how. So he remembered me from that. Mentioned me to Larry King. I contacted his wife. Hey, I think this is crazy, but I think I went to school with your husband. This is 20 years later, and people go, "You didn't know who he was?" Well, his name was Christopher Rock in junior high. I didn't know anybody, but I knew. Do you know people you went to school with in junior high, Otto? Or
yeah, mostly you remember their first names. You know, if you knew it was right, Christopher, who knows?
Right, not Christopher Rock. Oh my God, that's the. Oh my God, he turned out to be the president of the United States, or you know, the greatest comedian ever. You know what I mean? So that mm-hmm. kind of thing.
Yeah.
But then we hooked up three times, and I'm trying to get connected with him again now that I live in L.A. He lives in L.A. too, and that's how that transpired.
Cool, man. It's nothing wrong with having your name said on all these shows by all these big famous guys.
Oh yeah, by the way, Chris mentioned me twice in the Oscars. So two times. Love your stretch. You mentioned my name as part of an Oscar gag. So how cool is that, right?
And it's funny because I think the relationship is something that's written into stone for him now. He remembers those days and he draws a lot off of those times you guys spent together. And then you have a name that when you say it, it ends up just feeling like he made it up for the punchline. It comes off his tongue like a funny name. So it's a double play for him.
Yeah, interesting that from your vantage point, if you didn't know who I was, you go, like Joan Rivers used to do. Oh, who used to do that? Was it Joan Rivers? She would mention, oh, yeah, this woman, Heidi or something. Remember that? She'd have a shtick. I go, that's sort of some character she made up. You know what I mean?
Right, because that last name, you'll say something like Heidi Stolosevich. You just throw right. something out there that no one's going to say. No one's expecting you to say. And to see him say Moskowitz the way he does it is like he's exaggerating something.
No, and the character he based on his show, Everybody Hates Chris, is called Greg, is his name. He looks just like me, like that's stuff right. like this Ernie and Bert type shirt, you know, with stripes on my shirt. It's like unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. That's funny.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Well, listen, then what have you got going on now? You wrapped up the last film that's about to come out. So what else is going on for you?
Right, I got the music video coming out, the one Alex Jones style. Okay, so what I got coming out now, and I do. Oh. An Avalanche music video, Avalanche, is featuring this lead singer from Weezer. That's coming out in a couple of weeks. I had a little bit part of that as cool. a pissed off driver. Yeah. Okay. So what's coming up next? So I got Mosky Channel. Mosky, yes, my own channel. How many people could say that? Even Sean Hannity, Tucker Carlson, Laura Ingraham. And what's the woman on MSNBC? What's her face? Her face is in my head right now. She's got a lot of big ratings. You know what I'm talking about? Rachel Maddow.
Oh, there you go.
Channel. Yes, she has her own show. Anyway, so I got my own channels, numerous shows, Mosky at the Movies, and Musking Friends and about five shows. And thanks to Antoinette Ortega, she discovered me on Facebook. I connected with her. She's looking for somebody for a channel. She believed in me and knew I was all about business. We connected, and it's going great. Thanks to her. She's like, she's going to be the next network mogul.
Cool.
Mark my words. Yeah. So that's what I got going on. And of course, going to try to get now different shows. I've been auditioning for other projects recently. So try to get something going with that. And the music. Got to get the music going. My goal is to ultimately play the Super Bowl halftime show with my act. Being in a costume, getting other members, and getting some other songs going. I got let me just say real quick, the bass player. We got a couple minutes here, real quick. Bass player from Pat Benatar, the first 10 years of her career. Roger Capps played my song, and also Keith England, the amazing, who you mentioned earlier on in this interview. Unbelievable vocals, incredible. He's playing actually right now with the guy from Spinal Tap, Harry Shear.
Right.
He got a solo album. Anyway, so those two guys. I like to think I'm competitive now. Against any songwriter or any artist performing out there.
Well, I tell you what, performing at the Super Bowl halftime is I would definitely describe as a lofty goal, but I believe in setting lofty goals.
Oh, yeah, that's just it. I was telling somebody the other day, I go, look, you got to shoot for like another planet because you go further if you go, gee, I don't know if I can make it, gee, and I'm going to shoot for, let's say, Chicago, like, or whatever, you know, or like just an astro, you're shooting for or the moon, right? You want to shoot for something further.
Yeah.
So you go farther because you're going to work towards that further goal. You're going to get further. I like to think, but here's the thing. I like to think I'm competitive. Like my songs, the reaction I'm getting from people, it's clicking. The costuming is clicking. You know what I mean? Finally. Mm-hmm. So I like to think it's clicking and it's doable, as ambitious as that sounds. And I've seen the crappy acts going. I go, I can do better than that.
Mm-hmm. I hear you.
Better than that. And J-Lo's performing now in this next halftime show with Shakira. I can do better than that.
I bet you can. It'd be fun to see. Well, listen, man, we're coming up on the end of the hour. So why don't you give me your website real quick?
Absolutely. It's moskyatthemovies.com. Moskyatthemovies.com.
And that's M-O-S-K-Y at the movies?
Yeah, M-O-S-K-Y-A-T-T-H-E-M-O-V-I-E-S.
Perfect. And that's the best way for people to get a hold of you?
Absolutely. Or Facebook. Just find me on Facebook.
Cool,
David Moskowitz.
Well, thanks so much for spending time with me and coming on the show.
This is a blast. Thank you so much. I'm coming on again.
Hey, man, I'm coming out to L.A. to hang out.
Totally.
All right. Talk to you soon, man. Take care.
See you, buddy.
Bye-bye.